in the other room. And next submitter on my list is William Smith. Is William Smith here? No? Luke Templeton?
He was.
Good afternoon and welcome.
Thank you.
You received and read your original submission and all of the other material you've provided helpfully to us. So you're welcome now to speak to that material and let us know what your key points are.
Thank you very much. I did take a slight shotgun approach with the further materials, so I didn't know exactly what I'd need. Thank you very much for the opportunity to submit in the first place. I am part of a couple of different groups down my way, the Lower Aparima Catchment Group and the Waimatuku Catchment Group, and a lot of my original submission was very similar to the Lower Aparima Group because I was part of setting that up with them.
Yeah.
My specific different points, I suppose, is to do with where we farm, which is right against FOVO. The high tide mark is pretty visible there. So the coastal marine zone is something that I'm really focused on because that had a large impact on our farm. That farm shown there is actually my brother's side of the farm, but under the continuous land, this is my farm. We've been here for 100 years. About what I'm pointing is a flax mill, which is why my family's ended up where we are. And we've been through three different farming systems in our 100 years on the farm. So originally flax milling through to 1972, then my grandfather, Des Templeton, converted to sheep and beef when flax milling went under, and my father to dairy in 2002 for a hobby, really, I suppose. And then within the last 18 months, or a year actually, about where the end of that dot is, very close to there, I've put another dairy shed on. That's how this is a separate block. So we are now two farms, and we've purchased another block for my parents. So actually three farms, which is owned by my parents' trust. Now, in one of the land management areas, it talks about contiguous land holdings, which is a big tricky word for farmers like me. But that blocks that touch, and those three blocks touch and have common ownership. So there are rules which about water take for that kind of size, which we would mean that one of the old rules, we had individual permits for those management units.
Yeah.
The new rules, we would be pinged under the cow numbers. And I think a bit of maths in my original submission was about over 900 cows you would need different blocks to get some consents. So that does apply to us. But back to what I was meaning about coastal marine zones, 100 metres is probably that black line going all the way through across my farm and my brother's farm would be close to 60 hectares, and I haven't done that exact number. It could be closer to 100, which we would not be able to winter on. I have a problem with that because I think that excludes good management practices being able to mitigate risks, and it also doesn't take any attention to the I suppose, topography. Extensive pine trees right through there, and the land is actually rises up under those pine trees and then back down. We don't get overland flow into FOVO Strait. Everything goes out the waterway here. Now that waterway here is officially a Taitai stream. Those water freshwater management units I talked about earlier, the Aparima and the subgroup of that, the Waimatuku. So we would be classes in the Aparima zone. Within the Aparima, I've been told I'm in the Waimatuku catchment. All of my water and probably 99% of our whole farm system comes out through there. So we don't contribute to either the Aparima or the Waimatuku river systems. So again, I understand that for the plan, they have to have, it's much more efficient to have large units, but that isn't going to reflect. My farm does not have impact on the Aparima catchment at all, or the Waimatuku catchment. What else have I got in here? That was just to outline that we do go right around the coast as a unit.
Yeah.
And like I was saying, since then we've added another block in that zone. which again attaches. It's just a little look. It almost shows some of the topography, and I would like to speak a little bit to the physiographic zones. So mostly we are oxidizing and, let me get this wrong, glade soils. But it gets compressed in a microclimate. Right through there is a large terrace area, so everything above, or below I suppose on this map, is clay, and mostly here is sand. A very narrow band, probably 70 to 80 metres through there, which is peat. So I have paddocks which have clay, peat and sand all in one paddock, which is often very confusing for my granddad who drives a tractor and gets stuck right in the middle of it. From my current reading of the map, a lot of the peat is that small that hasn't shown up on there and doesn't affect our wintering numbers, but that could do. But we have done a farm environment plan, the farm focus plan through Environment Southam. We found that process very thorough and really constructive. It identified a small number of sources, mostly a couple of tracks next to, critical sources, tracks next to waterways, which in inclement weather we can get more overland flow than the grass barriers can work on, and it's given us a great priority list for riparian planning. So I am a great proponent of that. I think it's a great system. What else do I have in here? This is a photo looking towards Riverton in the right in the distance there, and just really to show again the topography. So where we are, the sea is very, very close. I'm currently wintering cows about from this fence line to the right on my uncle's property, which is adjacent to ours, which we wouldn't be able to do under the current plan, under the proposed plan, because it's within 100 metres. But I'm opposed to that in the meantime, because I don't see how it's going to have an effect on the water quality by moving us out of that zone. And we don't, like I said, we don't get overland flow because of the topography. What else did I put in? It was a particularly wet day, but again shows that we have large, the pine plantations between stock and the sea. And just on the other side is a major, major waterway, which is that Otago stream, which drains through. What do I have? Couple of glory shots. Another thing I wanted to touch on was I tried to attach it. We did get a new permit, dairy consent, conversion consent within the last 18 months. We received that in about February last year, and since then have put on another dairy shed. We are not milking any more land than we did before, but we have gone up slightly in cow numbers. That made me very motivated to look through the land and water plan to see what impact that was going to have, since we had just done a big lump of investment. Mm-hmm. And with that, we did do updated reports, including our overseer update for nutrient management. And our number is very high because we are on sandy soils, and we can get lashed on the coast with weather conditions. I don't understand it's outside this process, but we were aware of that going in, and it is a risk for us. That's why I'm looking at this. And so the limit setting process coming is another big scary one for me. So that's about all I have to say.
Okay. Thank you for that. I've just got one question for you in terms of the issue you raised regarding the coastal marine area zone.
Yes.
And the 100-metre exclusion that's currently in the plan. And in your submission, you asked for that rule to be removed. If the rule was to remain, what kind of buffer do you think would be reasonable? If not 100 metres, what would be a reasonable number?
I think that is entirely dependent on where you are. Yeah. But so in this zone, we actively have dairy cows come right up to that fence, and on occasion into this zone here, we have a fence running just on the inland side of that dune. So the probably the narrowest would be 15 metres from there to the high tide mark, mm-hmm. but it's a 3 metre lift up and over.
Yeah.
We've got other areas where there's probably 50, 60, 70 metres of trees and dunes in between. So I don't have a number because I think it's entirely dependent on what is in that zone. Like if we didn't have those dunes and really big king tides washed right in, then it wouldn't be appropriate for us to be wintering there at all. So, and that could be a much longer area if it's a much flatter zone. So I think it's got to be appropriate for the area.
Oh, that's good. Thank you very much. Let's see if we have any other questions for you, Paul.
No, I think you've you set yourself clearly in your submission, so I'm happy with that. You made the points clear, so thank you.
Thank you.
I'm the same. Thank you for your presentation. And the pictures were very helpful in getting a view on how your operation works.
Thanks.
Good afternoon, Mr. Templeton. On your submission, you're referring to the freshwater management units not being too large.
Yeah, I think, again, like I said, all of my drainage water, and on my small half of that farm, I've got 17 kilometres. My brother has close to 13. We're very close to 30 kilometres of drainage waterways over, we're about 435 effective hectares, probably 500 including my parents. So there's probably 35 kilometres of drains because we're low-lying. All of that drains through our property. I know that we're not going to get an Otaetae rule, right? I accept that, but my rule will be set off. If it's currently the way I read it, we're going to get controlled by things that could be happening at the top of the upper rim catchment, or right over to the in the Waimatuku group, where again I'm part of as a subgroup. I think we have to get smaller because the farm conditions are so different. Like my issues in my farm are completely different. Where we have our major issue is probably nitrate leaching. We don't have overland flow as a general rule because we're very flat and we have decent drainage, but nitrate goes straight through. So for us, we need to be keeping stock out of waterways to limit the E. coli and the sediment, which is the phosphate in there as well. So that's the things we can control. It's completely different from people another at the top. But if we are treated as one big aporema unit, we're very different.
Yeah, I understand that. I thought it was related to your earlier discussion.
Yeah. Hopefully, I meant it to be.
You've got effluent pond?
I do. I have one, and my brother has one as well. Both with. I'm going to lose my words again, sorry.
Membranes?
No, we use weeping wall traps to solids separate. May I just lead on from that,
yeah.
Mr. Ellison? One of the other points in my submission was about effluent dispersal, and in the plan, and I haven't read the 42 report to see if there is a change on that, so please correct me if I'm wrong, but it did suggest that we wouldn't be able to spread, now as I read it, solids or liquid effluent between the 1st of May and the 30th of September. Again, that's a really large block of our year, and I think that completely takes out good management practices of having a hand in when to do that. Like this year, we actually had a really wet April, so I couldn't have done anything up until May. We had a quite dry start of May, and as I read it, I'm still allowed to, so hopefully. I'm happy to dive myself in if I'm wrong. But we did spread in the start of May, and we're still spreading now, liquid effluent, when appropriate, when it's dry, not today, obviously. But yesterday we did move them so that with the next fine day we can spread again. And I think that's really important to leave the ability of good management to appropriately farm. Otherwise it's a really long time from the 1st of May to the 30th of September to store your effluent. And what it will mean is it will drive people to spread as much as they can in late April, regardless of the weather, regardless of the impact, because they can't in that huge period.
Yes, we've had a lot of submissions on that.
I thought you would have.
has been discussed in section 42 A as well.
So
there are things we'll be looking at as well. Thank you. The glossary terms, when we're talking about provide definitions for, and I was just going to ask you if you had any suggestions.
I have concerns, not suggestions. So, like I said, we have that's my big duck pond, and that's our main, what we call the sanctuary at our place. That's over two hectares, so it is a large water body. If that's called a lake or a significant wetland, again, that's going to have compounding effects on my ability. Well, not my ability farm, but definitely the way I farm. Currently we have had winter crops right beside it, again using buffer zones, and that if we can't, or if it is called a lake or a significant wetland, then that will have implications. So I'm really seeking clarification on that. I don't know, Mr. Ellison.
Thank you.
Mark?
Well, thanks. Just to go back, you were talking before about applying effluent in the winter. I know there were some more submission to say that you should use the Environment Southland website with the particular points that it's got, and that talks about soil moisture and temperature, which you mentioned in your submission. So is that what you're saying that people should use?
It's a really good pointer. Currently I don't use I use those as indicators for fertiliser rather than effluent at the moment. I'm really going off, I'm looking at the paddocks, I'm putting it on and saying, right, are we at saturation or not? I'm in a lucky position that the local monitoring site is about there for soil temperature and moisture level. But like I said, there's a big step terrace, there's clay up here and sand down here. And so we often heat up faster and have much faster changes in water level, so we'll pull, and then within about 12 hours it'll be gone. So there was big puddles driving up today, which I was not looking at, and but who knows, with 2 days of wee bit of wind and no rain, we could be spreading again without puddling, and I think that's, at the moment, that's the best I can do, yeah. So I think it would be a good to have that information really available, and as a guideline for farmers to say, look, you know, you have, and these, say it'll be a good day because you have not nutrient uptake when the soil temperature's up, or especially the moisture levels down. But I was trying to hopefully provide some workable solutions.
If you thought that your property wasn't reflective of the nearest site,
yes,
you had your own one, which was perhaps more reflective, like that soil moisture tape and temperature.
You definitely could, and then. For us, like I was saying, we have all my water goes out our waterway. Do we have our own monitoring in there as well? Like, that would be really cool. There's a certain, it's about 25,000 currently, I understand, to put continuous monitoring in. That's for water quality. I think you're right. I think that places, and I don't know what the cost of that soil moisture or the temperature is, but that would be a good tool. Sometimes you know.
Sorry?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes it's pretty obvious that it's a big frost, don't bother. But, yeah.
You also mentioned about cleaning tile drains using water blasting.
Yes.
Now, can you explain that and tell us what kind of effect that has? Is just the dirt that you're cleaning out of the drain go into a stream, or does it go into the land, or what is it?
Okay, for us, mostly it is into the stream, and that's usually very dependent on where on the farm it is. Again, up on the clay areas, there will be clay sediment, so brown runoff, and our aim with that is to monitor how far down it goes. Typically, it doesn't go very far. We would use maybe 1,000 litres of, well, no, you can get more than that. 300 litres should do about 200 metres. That makes sense. So it's actually not a large volume of water to clean what for us 200 metres is about what our normal drains are. They're mostly short spurts because we have so many ditches to run into. So we're really looking at the creek and how much water, how much sediment has run into that. I have other zones which are around my new cow shed in this area where it's sand country. We've put a filter stock on the outside of our, well, mostly an overflow instead of clay tiles, but do the same thing. Filter stock on the outside to stop sand running in. What we didn't see happening, foresee, but what we have noticed afterwards is we're getting iron precipitating out in there. So, and when we water blast, it's actually red iron coming out. And again, we monitor the creek for that. Usually, when the one I'm thinking of, it's a longer run than usual. It's about 600 metres right up to my cow shed to take its rainwater diversion over the winter. And that stream would be rust-coloured for about 2 or 3 hours for about 300 metres. But you wouldn't see that coming out at the creek at the sea. It's because we have the large settling pond. Well, the sanctuary acts as a large settling pond. Most of my brother's farm and about half of mine does go into there before it goes through there to the sea. So those sediments and rust do go into there. Have I explained that enough, or do you want to know about the process?
No, quite a few people have made suggestions on that and suggested it should be allowed to be emitted activity. I'm just wondering what kind of effect it has, and if we were to say it could be done, but it would have to be within certain parameters, and what they would be, and how much discoloration might occur, and how long.
Yeah, I agree, and I would be. Yeah. We don't want to be negatively affecting our water at all. Like, we're quite proud of where we are and our environment. When I water blasted the tile and it came out red, I was quite concerned the first time. But you keep an eye on that, and it was gone over a day. So over transient effects, and that's on a small contributory to the main one. We think if we don't obviously go out and do them all on the same day, move around, and then we give the wildlife in there as great a chance as we can. And again, a small section of creek might turn muddy for an hour, but it's a very small amount of water compared to what is in the main body, and again, transient effect. So, yeah, we don't want to have a negative impact with the tiles, but they're a very powerful tool for us, and I think for the amount of sediment we do get out of them is much less than if we had an open drain in that area, because then you've got banks down the both sides where A, we would need fencing, B, we can still get run in anyway. So I think the tiles, they're not perfect, but they have more positive than negative. But that's not a scientific opinion, sorry.
Yeah, no, thanks. No, that's quite helpful. Thanks for coming in today. You've come a long way from the other side of South just about, so.
Yeah.
And just in terms of that issue you raised about the May to September date, your submission raised that issue in relation to Rule 38, and the officers have recommended to us that May to September restriction be removed from that rule. So but the officers have responded positively to your submission. We haven't made a decision on that yet, but that's where the situation sits at the moment.
Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you very much for coming in and making your views being known.
Thank you.
And last